today. We're talking about it now. Join us, 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Other than our next guest, Bernie Williams, who, of course, you know, was one of the star center fielders of the Yankees of all time, who played in four World Series, beloved on and off the field for so many years. But what you might not know is quite just how talented a musician he has been for so many years, how many albums he's created, how many awards he's won, including being nominated for a Latin Grammy. How many other performers have performed with him? That you just heard us by one of my faves, with one of my faves, David Benoit. Bernie Williams, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. I'm so happy to chat with you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So shall I call you Mr. Williams? Are you more comfortable with that? I feel like, you know, Bernie sounds a little bit familiar.
That's my dad. call me Bernie.
All right. I'm going to call you Bernie. And let me just tell our audience, you're going to be at the Ridgefield Playhouse at 4 p.m. on Sunday for a concert. I'm going to be there, by the way. I'm going to be there with my husband. We're major fans. We can't wait to come.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It'll be fun.
Well, you know, when I saw that you were performing with David Benoit, this was years ago, he's absolutely one of my favorites. And it tells me a lot about you and your style that you're gravitating toward that kind of a rhythm and a groove and a jazz. When were you always playing music, even throughout your career as a Yankee?
Yes, I was. I started playing music, and specifically the guitar, around the same time that I started playing baseball in the Little Leagues. I was about eight and a half years old. My dad, he was a merchant marine, retired. He had brought a guitar from Spain, and he sort of taught himself how to play. He had a mixture of the Spanish music that he learned in some of his trips and some of the traditional Puerto Rican music that I grew up listening to. And that kind of got me started in the music, in my love affair with music, especially with the guitar. I went to a performing arts high school at the same time I was playing Little Leagues in Puerto Rico. And by the time that I was already a senior in high school, they already had eyes on me to play in the minor leagues for the Yankees. And I sure took my guitar with me and was just playing right after high school. I can't really go out, you know, at night and do anything, you know, unless you're 21. So I signed to play baseball right after my high school year, my senior year. So I always took my guitar, and I had it in my rooms and my bus drives and my plane rides. So they have always been sort of a parallel existence, if you will.
It must have been so much fun to tour with you. Can you imagine being on a bus with someone like you, and you take the guitar out and you're playing for people, and it's so soothing and the music is so wonderful. No wonder why you were so beloved, why you made so many friends, because music is something that everybody wants to gravitate towards.
Yes, it is. And it is it's funny when you get all the my teammates, you know, that would listen to me, they would have requests from heavy metal to like to reggaeton to everything in between. They would like pick up the guitar and try to play, and they would think that I was making it so easy looking when they would, pick it up and try to strum a chord or whatever. They would feel like, this is harder than I thought. So they started getting a lot of appreciation for me showing up with my guitar and playing. Some of the times, I used to sit right behind Derek Jeter in the plane rides And on a good day, I could get him to sing a little bit with me. But most of the time, he will look back at me and say, "Hey, man, I'm trying to sleep. But I got to practice." So he was always fun to see me and hear me and just kind of make fun and just tease each other with that.
Yeah, we're chatting with Bernie Williams. I always wanted to play the guitar, Bernie, as a kid because I thought that it was the musical instrument. You know, when I was growing up, it was Carole King and it was singer-songwriters and it was folk and Peter, Paul, and Mary. And I thought this would be so amazing. I loved the music and I wanted to be the person sitting around the campfire. But, you know, my fingers never had the strength. I could never do it enough to get those calluses and blisters, and I ended up giving up. And I can't tell you how often I tried, but it hurt too much, the acoustic guitar.
Yeah, it is a process. You need to sort of train your fingers and your hand, your wrists, your shoulders to do something that they may not be too used to doing. And in that process, I mean, it could be painful. The first couple of months, I know that there was, people that really had, and especially including myself, 9, 10 years old, I would, complain of pain. But once you pass that process of developing calluses and kind of getting used to the mechanical aspects of making sound with the instrument, it's just become so rewarding because you start picking songs, learning chords, and then singing and writing music, and it just becomes a joy. So I think you still have a shot. I wouldn't give it up. So,
all right. I moved on to trying to do piano. I feel it's easier on my fingers, and I'm still just a hacker. Yes. I'm still just a plotter.
Definitely.
It's hard.
Definitely easier on your fingers. And I think you may have more choices, with 88 keys.
Yeah.
As opposed to limited, range that the guitar has. But
I know, but it's not as portable. It's not the same thing. You can't just grab your... Years ago, they didn't have keyboards. I'm talking many years ago. Now I guess you have a keyboard, but it's not the same. There's nothing like carrying a guitar and sitting around. You know, when I went to San Juan, and you grew up in San Juan, I read, one of the things that is so beautiful about being in Puerto Rico, and in particular in San Juan, in old San Juan, is that the music comes out from everywhere. In other words, you just walk in on the street and you're dancing because people are playing music.
Yeah, that is correct. Especially in Christmas time, that's where we have the old parrandas, where, a group of people like in the countryside will like get together and go from house to house, doing more of the Christmas caroling, if you will. But you would stay in the house and they would get invited in and have some hors d'oeuvres, and then everybody would get ready to go to the next house. And then at the end of the night, talk about 3-4 in the morning, we get this big pot of chicken soup, in some house. And that was some of the traditions we lived through. And Christmas time in Puerto Rico, I really miss them.
I bet. We're chatting with Bernie Williams. All right, I've got a couple of people that were itching to have me ask you a question, and you got to know that this is coming. So you ready? One question comes from David. David wants to know, how close were you to becoming a Red Sox player? He says that he read about it and he thought you were very close and then you weren't. And he wants to know, were you very close to becoming a player for the Red Sox? He's a Yankee fan.
I was very close, but the Red Sox were not the only suitors that I had at that time. We went in conversations with, I believe, the Arizona Diamondbacks at the time, which were kind of led by Buck Showalter, my old manager, that went to the Diamondbacks to create that team that actually beat us in 2001, after 9/11. And Red Sox with Mr. Duquette, yes, he did offer me a very substantial increase in my salary to go out there and play with the Red Sox. But at the end of the day, I decided to remain with the Yankees because I had a family at the time with small children, and they were already in school, and they had all the friends here. And we were sort of established. So to start from scratch in a different place, to me, it just didn't seem that much of a better option since I knew the system, and I knew Joe Torre, I knew the coaching staff. And I was on the verge of getting into my prime as a baseball player, I made the decision to remain a Yankee. And it took me, you know, to have a call with Mr. Steinbrenner at the time, the late George Steinbrenner, to sort of negotiate my contract.
Really?
I know I want to be here, and I know you want me here, so let's make this work. And at the end of the day, that's what it took for me to remain, the rest of my career with the Yankees.
So you got on the phone with him directly. No agents, no lawyers, just you and Mr. Steinbrenner, and you worked it out.
We worked it out, and it was just the best decision in my career, because after that, that was at the end of the 1998 season. In 1999, we won again against the Braves, and then in 2000, we won again against the Mets, and then we went into 2001, and we were two outs away from winning it. Actually, one out away from winning it. In the Arizona, it didn't happen, but we were part of a great process of healing of the nation in after post 9/11, making sure that we stayed with our same values, and we were not going to get intimidated by terrorist attacks and things like that. So I think baseball had a big role instilling that into the country, and we were the two teams that were in the World Series, you know, kind of like proving that point. So it was really rewarding to be part of that process.
I bet. I wanted to ask you, Bernie Williams, what makes the because you're a champ and you've been a champ, and it's interesting to me, somebody who is not only very talented as a musician and also an athlete, but that it's all about performing. In other words, you could be talented and play your guitar in your own house, but you're choosing to perform for many years. And as an athlete, it was at your level all about performance. Can you just tell me a little bit of insight that you must have into what makes the difference for you? How do you describe how you are able to perform when everybody is watching? The kind of pressure. What happens within you as a human being that allows you to perform at your best when everybody is watching?
It's so interesting that you asked me that question. And I think, you know, the best way that I can describe it is it's all about preparation, I think. You know, the repetition, constant repetition of one's skills, just honing that. You know, it's been said that it takes about 10,000 hours to master a skill. And I certainly put in my time. So when you go into a situation where you're facing, a pitcher at the major league level, in front of 50,000 people, and then the millions more watching, you are basically, the result of hours upon hours upon hours of training in which you feel that you know this skill second nature. You know, like, in other words, you can wake up at 2:30 in the morning all sleepy and still grab a bat and still hit a ball. That's the way that you kind of have to need to have this skill level set. And once you have that and you feel in your heart and your soul and your bones that you're prepared, then it becomes exciting to go out there and perform, because you know that you have done the work. You've done your research on the pitcher that you're facing. You've done your research on the defense that you need to play, all these players on the opposing team, and try to run to different scenarios in your mind of things that could happen, like any other work, you know. And then it becomes more of an inward kind of thing. You rely on your preparation, and you trust it to get you through all the difficult times that you may be facing. Baseball is one of these things that the game is based a little bit on failure. I mean, even if you're a 300 hitter, which is kind of like the best in the business, means that you're going to fail 7 out of 10 times. So you're relying on this, you know, powerful, infusion of self-confidence and preparation in order for you to feel that you can actually perform when the pressure comes in. And more times than not, you know, with your God-given ability, you have that opportunity to do that. And there are just so many, you know, you hit, I don't know, 500-600 times during the course of a season. So some of those times you are definitely going to do well, especially at a 30% rate, which is, you know, what it is to hit 300. But like I said before, it all comes down to preparing yourself mentally and physically to make sure that you're up to the task, and then trusting that preparation. The dimensions on the field don't change because of the people that come in. You know, the field, it's still the same distance from the pitcher to the batter, still the same distance from the batter to the bases. And if you were playing in a Little League field or Yankee Stadium, the dimensions are the same. So knowing that you have done the work, preparing yourself for that particular task, to me has proven to be the major ingredient in my success.
We're chatting with Bernie Williams, who's going to be at the Richfield Playhouse tomorrow at 4 p.m. with his fabulous combo band. On Sunday. I'm going to be there as well. Can't wait. Bernie Williams, you're a parent. You're a father of three, right? Three daughters?
No, I have four kids. Three daughters and one son.
Okay. You have three daughters and one son. And I read that you raised them in Armonk. Is that true, by the way? Is that true?
Armonk? Yeah. Yeah.
Because my husband's family was one of the first owners in Windmill Farms, which is in Armonk, and he was born and for a part of his childhood was raised there too. I just thought that was funny. But anyway, so as a parent, so you obviously, I mean, it's obvious, your parents did something very right to get you to be this human being who was able to rely on his self-confidence. With your four kids, raising them in America, I'm just curious, like how do you feel that you did infuse to your children these values that you learned to become a success?
Well, it's a really interesting question. The best way that I could answer that is just to, you know, defer a lot of the credit to my wife at the time. We needed to have this sort of team effort going. You know, I would take care of things on the field and to be the best, you know, baseball player that I could be, so we could have a better contract, so we can have a better opportunity to expose these kids, you know, to a good education. But I think it was relying upon her to take care of things at home. I would come in, you know, during the season, it was really, really hard to come in, out for a week, in for a week and a half. And you know, it definitely took its toll in the family dynamics. So I think, you know, it was, you know, they would see me on TV. They would, you know, whenever I could, I would, you know, take them to school and I would spend, you know, a lot of time with them, you know, as time permitted. But I think, you know, the team at home, that support system at home, was really, really important to have them, to be happy and to know that, you know, that was a way, but he was always thinking about you guys and, things of that nature. It was really hard. I mean, it's something that you were not really prepared to. As a father, you know, being a professional athlete, but you still have to make the time. And make your best effort to infuse in these kids, the values that your parents, my parents, instilled in me, and I still live to this day.
Are you close to them today? I imagine they're young adults. Are you close to them?
Yes, I am close to them, and they are doing really, really well. All graduated from college and just going into their lives. And this time, you know, the difficult times, you know, with COVID and, looking for jobs and things of that nature. But I think they have a better appreciation of what I did for them as adults, be different from being kids and kind of wondering, you know, why is that not here all the time and things of that nature. I think now they kind of like, realize, hey, I mean, he was doing all of this, and look over all the things that we were able to, a good education, you know, having not, struggle with college and debt and all of that. You know, as they have become adults, they have been more appreciative and realizing, you know, all the sacrifice that we all did, you know, all both parents, yeah. You know, all the family. Trying to raise them. So, yeah, their relationship is very good and it's still improving. thank God.
Bernie Williams, where did you spend COVID? Where do you live now?
I spent time in the Northeast, in Westchester County, and in Florida, kind of going back and forth between Clearwater, Florida, and Westchester County in New York. And also have a place in New Fairfield, which I'm kind of like fixing up.
Fairfield. Are you on Candlewood Lake? Are you on Candlewood Lake? Oh, yeah,
I am close to. I can see the lake, but I'm not in the lake. It's beautiful.
It's very beautiful. It's beautiful up there. Well, Bernie Williams, I'm looking forward to seeing you 4 o'clock on Sunday. I'll be in the audience and maybe I'll be able to run backstage and get a photo with you or something like that. I'd love to meet you in person. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. It's really been a pleasure to get to know you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for, and thank you for all the audience. Please come to the concert. We're going to have a great time. And God bless. Stay safe.
God bless. Oh, absolutely. It's marvelous music. I can't wait. Bernie Williams on the Lisa Wexler Show today. Let's have a little listen.